Hey guys, just wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening to Sidebar Forever. If you like the show, please subscribe to us at sidebarforever.com, as well as share episodes of the podcast on your social media. That way, new listeners can find us as well. The man in the Beskar armor has returned in Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni's epic tale of bounty hunting, double crosses, giant monsters, and galaxy-hopping adventures in Season 2 of Disney's The Mandalorian. All the familiar faces from Season 1 are back as well. Cara Dune, Greef Karga, Moff Gideon, and of course, Baby Yoda, who we find out his true name is really Grogu. We also get some fresh faces with this new season, such as Morgan Elsbeth, Cobb Vanth, and from Rebels and Clone Wars, Bo-Katan and Ahsoka Tano. It's a real hoot. In the conversation, Dwight and Swain compare the violence and kills from seasons 1 and 2. Talk about the casting choices of Rosario Dawson, Katie Sackhoff, and Timothy Oliphant, and revel in the return of Tamara Morrison as Boba Fett. And also, rest in peace to the Razor Crest. Both seasons of The Mandalorian are available now on the Disney Plus app. Check them out ASAP. We have spoken. And as always, thanks for listening to the podcast.
Good morning, Dr. Silberman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly or there will be trouble.
Clearly I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
Welcome back, everybody. It's Swain and Dwight on this episode, and we are here to talk about and to discuss The Mandalorian Season 2.
Right.
Released on October 30th, which is actually my wife's birthday.
Nice.
And the last episode concluded on December 18th. And I think Dwight and I are both pretty high and pretty thumbs up on this season of The Mandalorian.
This is the way.
This is the way, yo. There you go. That's the proper set off, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. That's what we need. Mandalorian season 1 was a real triumph. We didn't know what to expect, and you know, everybody seemed to really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. We were introduced to then Baby Yoda, who we now know is Grogu.
Right?
Lots of memes and lots of, like this is the way and
right?
Just tons of cool things that came from The Mandalorian Season 1. One of the things that I think we all kind of walked away with, and D, you maybe can speak to this better than I can, but as near as I can tell, you know, this is really feeling like Star Wars on some level.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole thing in the Star Wars camp right now. There's an ongoing, quote-unquote, civil war, which may or may not be necessarily true in regards to the people in charge, like Kathleen Kennedy in one camp and Jon Favreau and Filoni in another, who has the best reputation amongst fans and who has the best narrative focus for the future of Star Wars since it's been passed on by Lucasfilm. Mm-hmm. And it's an ongoing argument, man. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a hands-down thing for Filoni and Favreau.
Yeah.
I mean, the Fantastic Four, if you will, you know, the Fantastic Duo, you know, FF2, you know, those guys, they know what they're talking about. They know what they're doing.
I agree, man. And, you know, even going back for Filoni, even going back to, you know, Rebels and Clone Wars. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, the guy just really has his finger on the pulse of what makes Star Wars, Star Wars. I mean, I told you and Adrian that my daughter, Skye, is, you know, she's a big fan of Rebels. Clone Wars.
Right.
She has not watched Mandalorian, and she's not really that interested in the live action stuff. She kind of fell off from that.
Sure.
But and Ahsoka Tano is her favorite, you know, Star Wars character.
Right.
Even over the the characters from the original trilogy, which she adores.
Right.
You know. But so I think you're right. I think, you know, I don't know how things are playing out online or, you know, in the deep Star Wars fandom, but I do think that that Filoni and Favreau really do have they have it right. They've got a handle on what Star Wars could and should be for the future.
Yeah.
You know, with season one and season two.
It's a situation now wherein what we're looking for is, I guess, the ones that have a high profile YouTubers that are really supporting and get behind them. And there's a whole thing right now where one of the prominent individuals inside of the Lucas camp, or quote unquote Disney Lucas camp, mm-hmm. is criticizing one of the YouTubers for showing emotions on his YouTube screening of it. And I won't mention his name because, as far as I'm concerned, he's a scumbucket. And you know. The idea of someone taking a stance against a fan who is appreciating your work and appreciating to the point to where it brings tears to his eyes that's repulsive to me.
It is to me as well, yeah.
Like, how dare you? You know? I mean, this is what it's all about. Stories are supposed to touch people and make their lives engaging. And if you could touch a chord inside of somebody to make them appreciate your work better, then you've done your job. You know, right. And done it well. Yeah. You know, you superseded your job. You know,
I agree.
And this guy has no idea what he's doing and what kind of discord he's sown in the community. He needs to be put down. So
okay, not literally, just you know.
No, not literally, but I mean, you know,
a blaster to the skull.
right. Which, if you notice, man, that, you know, it's a funny segue you should say that, but if you notice. I think this season was a lot more human on human violence, dude. Like the impact was quite obvious. You know, last season was just droid and buckets. You know, they were getting shot. When you say buckets, I'm talking about the stormtroopers. They were getting shot. No personality. You know, they're just bodies falling. You know, a couple of Jawas ate it. You know, a couple other creatures ate it from Din Djarin's awesome gun. But there were no actual point-on-point headshots. There were some headshots this time, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I thought it was fine. You know, they ramped up some things in season two. Mm-hmm. That they, you know, like you said, they went from level one to level five in season two.
Right.
Versus season one. And then also, too, I think the other thing about season two is it seems as if the things that really worked for season one, they didn't abandon those things or say, hey, let's reinvent the wheel. They say, okay, let's take it. Let's put another layer of icing on it. Let's put some sprinkles on the motherfucker now.
Right.
Let's really make it pop. But the stars of a Mandalorian season two, you know, we've got our mainstays or our go-tos, of course, Pedro Pascal, as the central character.
Mm-hmm. Din Djarin.
Giancarlo Esposito, which is actually how you pronounce it. That's how you pronounce his name. Yeah, it's Esposito.
Okay, I thought you said Esposito. Oh, go ahead.
No, well, yeah, I'm positive. It's Esposito.
Okay.
He's back as Moff Gideon. Gina Carano's back. Carl Weathers, Amy Sedaris, mm-hmm. Ming-Na Wen, and Bill Burr. And then also they added Katie Sackhoff as Bo-Katan, Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka. And then we see Temuera Morrison.
Yeah. Back is the incredible Boba Fett, sir.
As the Boba Fett, yo.
Killing it, sir.
Yeah, yo. It was really nice. And we also have Diana Lee Inosanto, Timothy Oliphant, Michael Biehn.
Right.
And then in the final episode, which I think is entitled The Rescue, we see Mark Hamill come back.
Kind of Mark Hamill,
As Luke Skywalker. Which
was a nice reprise.
It was.
I got props out to the boss from Mercedes Vernado, dude, as one of the Mandalorian warriors too, dude. She killed
it. Okay. All right.
Yeah, man. All right. Yeah, man.
There we go. this season, you know, written and produced, again by Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni.
Right.
And most of the same directors came back, with the exception of added to it was Robert Rodriguez.
Okay. Yes.
His episode was fantastic, yo.
Oof.
Oh,
that was the acknowledgement and the reintroduction of Boba Fett into the canon, man.
Yes, yo. It was glorious.
Yeah, man.
When Ming-Na showed back up as Fennec, I was like, oh, shit.
Yes, man. It was a full court press.
Yes. And then we also have, as a director, Carl Weathers, who gave us the gloriously memed jeans guy.
Yeah, man. That was, oof. I mean, that's what happens when you're wearing two hats, man. I mean, inevitably, you're going to, something's going to get mixed up. But that's not really his fault in that situation. I mean, yes, you could say he's a director. The buck stops and starts with him. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's also a production issue where you have the cameraman who's not fully focusing on what he should be doing and not establishing appropriate boundaries. And then they're not cutting out, they easily could have cut that little small, like maybe 10-second, 5-second piece of film that you saw there and, out of it, if they've been doing the editing properly.
Well, they didn't catch it before it was released. Exactly. And I understand they have since digitally taken him out.
Right. Oh, okay. Really?
So
nice.
So Gene's guy did get a blaster to the head. So.
Righteously so, man. you see this is one of those gaffers, man, that is probably standing by in the background someplace, right? And he's just like on the set watching the action from a distance, eating potato chips and shit.
Well, the way they tend to shoot things, I mean, everything is about the frame. So oftentimes, if you're shooting someone and there's a character outside the window and you're shooting from over the shoulder of a character who's inside the room,
right?
Just to the left and right of the character outside the window, there's probably a sound person or someone else right there. Okay.
Sure. Makes sense.
So, everything is just about the frame and just making sure that, you get what you need in the frame and then with enough of a bleed over so that, you can move it and adjust it a little bit if you need to. But
Right.
But, these are mistakes, and we live in a digital age where you can't go back and change it, and now it's gone forever.
It's funny you should mention that, too, man, because another one occurred also with the Tamura Morrison episode.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be like a plane or a helicopter.
It was a helicopter, right. Yeah.
Which I go back and look for it, and I don't see it now. It's like they can.
Yeah.
And I'm also wondering, man, about that crazy, I was glad to see Luke Skywalker, but, mm-hmm. They need to take more time to carefully craft the technology that they're using to make people's faces, to bring people's faces into current usage. I mean, it wasn't even de-aging software, man. I mean, that was something else. That was, and I'm still up in arms about what it could have been. It's either a deep fake. Or, I've seen artists online, they can do a better job of doing a likeness of Mark Hamill than that.
Well,
so I don't know what that was, man.
No, you're right. I mean, that was more along the lines of The Surrogates, if you remember the film, where it's like, the skin and the face looks very plastic and kind of mannequin-esque.
Right. Yeah,
And what Dwight is referencing is the final episode, The Rescue, where Mark Hamill does reprise himself in a way.
Mm-hmm.
As Luke Skywalker, and he kind of comes and saves our heroes,
right,
who are about to get their asses handed to them by the Dark Troopers.
Yeah.
But I thought the same thing. People were like, oh, the final episode of The Mandalorian was, oh, it was a religious experience. Oh, I levitated. My water broke. I mean, it was just, it was effusive reaction that you could find, and I was like, okay, it was cool,
right?
I dug it,
right?
It was cool to see Mark Hamill. I actually preferred the scenes where you couldn't see his face and he was just walking through,
right?
And just knocking out Dark Troopers, it was all good,
yeah.
But yeah, like the CGI on the face, it was like you said, it was either like a deep fake or and to some extent, I guess we have to be somewhat forgiving of television because television is a much faster medium than films are. So, all of the production that they're doing is probably times 100 in terms of the speed that they're trying to get it done so they can get, meet a deadline and get it out there. So,
yeah, no, not in this case, because if this was a week to week television type situation, I'd say yes. But the fact that these guys are a production schedule is like a year in advance. And the long game in the situation was that Filoni and they plan on bringing Luke back at the end of this episode, end of this season anyway.
Right.
So long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
But you say that though, D. But keep in mind, I mean, if you look at this season versus the last season,
right?
The look of everything was ramped up.
That's true.
The spaceships and the landscapes and the vistas were all immaculate and really looked much more impressive than the first season. So what you're talking about in terms of this particular episode, I agree with you. They were planning this. They had to have known it was coming. But at the same time, they ramped up all of the special effects and all of the CGI and all of that had to. So, you know, I mean, if they had spent, you know, 20% of their time on just Luke Skywalker, then they really are paying the other areas of the show a disservice, at least to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, I was, but at the same time, I did feel a certain kind of way, man, when I saw him again for the first time, and he did that semblance of the Return of the Jedi when he stepped into Jabba's palace.
Oh yeah,
I want you to release Captain Solo and give him to me, and Jabba's like, whoa, you know, you know, I had that kind of feeling, man. It was like, not knowing what he's going. Here's the thing, not knowing who it was in the X-wing, because my TV's not the biggest in the world, but some people say that you could see R2 in the back of it. Yeah, I couldn't from my screen.
I couldn't either. I have a pretty big TV, but I couldn't either, yo.
Yeah, I couldn't see it, you know. And it was one X-wing. It could have been anybody, you know. As far as I was concerned, it could have been a lead X-wing. It could have been many more. He was the first one to get there first. It could have been another X-wings coming up, you know, behind it or whatever the case may be.
But of course, once you saw the green lightsaber,
yes, I knew.
Yeah, I knew. You knew. Yeah.
And when I saw that belt buckle, sir.
Yeah. Woo. Yeah.
I knew it was a farm boy from Tatooine that made it big, man.
There you know? We go.
I was like, yes, man.
Let me ask you, man, just two quickies. Of the characters from the first season that came back in the second season, did you have a favorite moment for one of those? And what's one of your favorite moments from one of the new characters that they introduced in season two?
Unexpectedly, I have to say Bill Burr's character, man.
Same, yeah.
Yeah. He had a very humanizing effect on what it feels like you would be. That whole episode was really good. That was by Fumihara, wasn't it? Was it Fumihara that did it?
You mean Rick?
Rick.
Famuyiwa. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was Rick's episode. Okay, so yeah, man. That whole episode read to me like a scene out of an actual war movie, dude. It felt right to me.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
The pacing was dead on, and the humanization of the stormtroopers was interesting and engaging. Like, okay, it seems like no matter from any perspective, you can have a person either be a hero or a villain, depending on who has the camera at the time.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and even the exchange that Burr's character has with Mando in the vehicle when they're on their way to the to that fortress or that compound, you know, and he says, you know, you don't take your helmet off, I won't tell anybody. He says, you know, you know, he says, you know, everybody's got all these rules. He says, but you know, essentially, I'm paraphrasing. He says, you know, your rules kind of go out the window when certain pressures are applied and everybody has to kind of adjust and do what they got to do. And then of course, later on in the episode, which I think was called, the tragedy. You know, later on in the episode, that's when, you know, Mando does take his helmet off in front of Burr.
Right.
And Burr says, you know, hey, look, I won't tell anybody, you know,
right.
You know, it's just between me and you. But,
right.
But yeah,
brown eyes.
Yeah. Brown eyes. Yeah. That's right. They call him brown. Fucking A, that was funny.
It was.
But I hated him in that first season.
Yeah, he was an ass in the first
season. I was
like,
yo, kill him. Like, suck him into outer space, do something. I need to stop hearing him. But in this one, like you said, it was very humanizing. Mm-hmm. And he made you believe, especially, you know, when they're sitting in the cafeteria with the commander.
Right.
And then the commander tells a story and Burr tells his side of the story. And then, then it pops off. But what about from one of the new characters, man?
I mean, I give a respectable shout out to Dean Big Brother Almighty too, sir. His return in this season was awesome too. Giancarlo Esposito,
yeah.
He was awesome too, man. Like he brought it like full force in this, you know, this latest season.
Yeah.
I mean he was that guy that was you could tell he said in the extended scenes where they're talking about the whole season in a nice nutshell how involved he was in making sure that what it was to be a Moff and how he got that and how he wanted to be when he was a kid he looked up to Peter Cushing's version what a Moff was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And he you could tell he really amped it up, man. And when he said certain things, like he says he was talking to Din Djarin about his, you know, quote unquote brother in the Mandalorian, how they're barbarians. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a certain kind of disdain in his voice, man, which I loved. I loved his portrayal, man.
I did too. And I like the fact that when it came down to the dark saber.
Yeah, man.
You know, we find out, you know, Bo-Katan wants this back.
Right.
And then we find out that, you know, Mando is able to get it from Moff, but it's like, okay, no. It has to be one. It won't work unless it's one from the person.
Right.
That you take it from. And so, you know, now this creates this weird tension between, you know, Mando and Bo-Katan, which is it my understanding that Katie Sackhoff actually voices the character, or she voiced the character of Bo-Katan in the animated?
Exactly, she did. And then she reprises the role in actual live action, which is awesome to me.
Yeah,
I love it. But there's also some inconsistency too there, as far as what the animated series did and what they did in the live action series. And that, you know, one of the characters that has one of the Mandalorians that actually has the Darksaber actually gives her the Darksaber once before anyway. Like she actually gives it to her, hands it over to her, and she takes it.
Hmm.
You know. But yeah. I guess maybe where it is because Moff Gideon put her on the spot, you know, that in front of her other, you know, Mandalorians, that she couldn't just willfully take it the way she wanted to, even though, you know, Din just like I don't want it, take it, you know.
Right.
I paraphrase there too for
sure.
Yeah,
I took it just so I could give it to you, and you know we could get on with this. So
right, but you gotta admit though, man, he probably shouldn't be coming in there brandishing like when it was on and shit, dude. You know what I mean? Like he had Moff Gideon already in some shackles and whatnot, dude. He had to have it on. Like he's like, yeah, I got this. This is my kill and whatnot, dude. You know what I mean? So probably set her off. They probably set her off. Look at how he wields it. He wields it with such mastery. He could be, no, you know.
Right. So you and I, for anyone who doesn't know, you and I had the opportunity to actually meet and a little bit of hanging out in an interview with Rosario Dawson years ago, maybe 10 years
ago. That's right. Wow.
And we met her via our friend David Acheson.
Right.
And I was telling him online that I really thought it was cool. One, when we met her, she seemed like, you know, great person. But, mm-hmm. you know, I'm really happy to have her in the Star Wars universe as Ahsoka, who is my daughter's favorite Star Wars character.
Right.
And then also really representing, like, the first, you know, she's the first woman of color to be featured as an unbridled badass in the Star Wars universe. You know what
that's
I mean?
That's true.
She's not a side character who's there as an appendage to the male character. She's not part of a crew like, you know, Tandy Newton's character was in the Solo movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is her own badass. And, you know, and Rosario, from what I understand from an interview I read, she was ready to bring it.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really great. But what did you think about her translation? Because you watched, you know, Clone Wars and Rebels. What did you think about her translation of the character to live action?
I mean, her translation was flawless, you know, from a cartoon to a live action. Even a CGI character like Ahsoka Tano. You know, I must admit, I am still kind of... I still like Ashley Eckstein's voice because what I grew up with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's got that innocence to her that Rosario doesn't have, that's lost. And that's fitting considering what this is and what she's gone through to become who she's become. I mean, this is after her, you know, her innocence being a Padawan to Skywalker. This is after her leaving the Jedi Order and coming back, and kind of somewhat coming back, but not somewhat. Really.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so all that she went through in Order 66. So this is after this is the scarred woman. This is what's left over.
And that's what Skylar was saying when she was talking about the continuity. She said, "Well, mm-hmm. I guess after the second animated series, she said, you know, Ahsoka was like in her 30s."
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, Rosario and Filoni got together. And Ahsoka is Dave Filoni's creation, okay. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And so my understanding is they got together and figured it out that, okay, could she kind of be a woman in her 40s at this point? And like you said, obviously that would mean the innocence that Ashley Eckstein brought to, you know, the teenage, you know, Padawan,
mm-hmm. right.
Ahsoka to the, you know, older, more... battle scarred young woman to now,
right.
It would kind of make sense, but it is kind of a, it does feel a bit like a missed opportunity that you don't get any of that. And maybe they'll, you know, when they do what I understand is going to be an Ahsoka Tano live action series starring Rosario,
yes.
Maybe they'll do some flashbacks and maybe we will get some of that, you know, that innocent,
right.
That innocent part of her.
That'd be awesome, man. I'm with
you. Yeah. I think I liked Timothy Oliphant
mm-hmm.
in the that one episode, and
the first
I liked
episode, yeah.
And I liked Michael Biehn being in,
right?
You know, I like both of them being in the Mandalorian
right.
subuniverse, but they didn't give them much to do,
right?
You know what I mean? Like Timothy Oliphant is basically playing, you know, a version of his character from Justified or. You know,
right,
just a, you know, like a sheriff in a town, you know,
right,
in a western.
Right, right.
You know, he didn't have to do much, you know.
This is my town.
Yeah. And Biehn basically was like wallpaper. He's just like standing around and he gets to
yeah.
kind of sneer and kind of do his, you know, his Johnny Ringo thing, you know.
Yeah, it was so weird, man. Like, I couldn't even, well, first of all, as Oliphant goes, he was a little too skinny for me for that Mando costume, for that Mando armor, dude. I was like,
yeah,
you're... You need to eat a couple of wafers or something, dude. Like you're obviously not eating enough to fill that costume out. So I knew he really wasn't a Mandalorian when he first comes into the bar, like an old fashioned gunslinging sheriff would.
Yeah,
you know?
bow legged ass motherfucker.
is he bow legged? Yeah, really?
Well, I mean, usually skinny guys always kind of feels like they kind of bow legged
oh, okay.
in the desert, the western, you know.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's funny, man. So I didn't get that, and. Also, as far as Biehn goes, like I'm used to being a lot more talkative and have a lot
yeah.
more things to say, and be more effusive than he was. But he was kind of just like very laid back and
yeah.
Although, like I didn't think that was him. Like they either downplayed his looks or he's aged in a way which I won't say is not gracefully, but he's kind of rough around the ears now a little bit.
Well,
you know?
he's had some work done, as many people in Hollywood do when they, you know, they get over a certain age.
Okay.
But I felt the same way when he was up on top of the wall with Inosanto's character.
Right.
I didn't catch that it was him. It was only when he started moving around and he came down at one point. It was like, oh, that's Michael Biehn. Okay.
Right. Right.
You know, so I didn't really get it either to be honest.
Right.
It kind of missed me, but. Well, we know Mandalorian season 3 is coming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We know Pedro Pascal is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And we know we're going to get, you know, Ahsoka Tano and, is there another Star Wars TV series that they announced?
Yes. Tamara Morrison is coming.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Book of Boba Fett, sir.
The Book of Boba Fett. Really? They should just call it Old Man Boba Fett.
Yeah,
that's really where we are with it. It's like Old Man Logan, Old Man Blade, Old Man Boba Fett. It's really what
right?
we're talking about.
Hey, man, when he came into Jawa's palace and Bib Fortuna sitting on the throne, his fat ass now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He's like Boba.
Yeah,
I've heard somebody. You know, I heard
yeah.
things about you. So I don't want to hear that shit. You didn't even look
right.
for me. Pew pew.
Right. And that final key frame where they pull back and it's
yes, man.
Finnick on one side and Boba sitting on the throne, yo. That was
yeah.
that was nice, yo.
It was like watching the final scene of Conan the Barbarian with Arnold Schwarzenegger and the King Aquilonia, dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, so hats off. And mad props to the Mandalorian season two for really bringing it and taking it up several notches.
Yep. And rest in peace to the Razor Crest.
Oh yes. Oh, before we go, that's something I wanted to mention. So
okay.
You know how I, all Star Wars fans, you know, we take a lot of pride and a lot of ownership
right.
over the characters and the spaceships and the planets right. and you right. know everything
the
about
light,
it.
The lightsabers, right. Yeah, yeah,
everything. Like yeah, it's us. Once it's ours, right. it's ours forever.
Right.
So I guess Filoni and Favreau smartly said, look, we're not going to have any Millennium Falcon shit going on 10, 20, 30 years from now.
Oh, man.
The ship is gone. That's one. Ship right. is gone. What's the name of the ship? Right. Razorback?
Razor Crest.
Yeah. Razor Crest right. is gone. Forget it. Second, season two. This helmet must stay on shit. Look, right. rules are made to be broken.
That's it.
You know what I'm saying? Rules right. are made to be broken. And we're probably going to reach a point in Pedro Pascal's, you know, and in his a point in his career, you know, as it relates to being a part of this show, well, he's going to have to renegotiate his contract. He's probably going to be asking for more money.
Right.
And at that right. point, he was like, no, we need to see that pretty face, that handsome face and that impish smile. We need to see all that. Fuck this helmet, this mask shit.
Well, you know, man, arguably speaking, I mean, Mandalorian is a warrior, so
right.
he may not wear it as much. He may keep it on the side like the other more mainstream Mandalorians do.
Right.
Because as it's been stated, you know, the sect he was part of is like they're looked upon as being zealots.
Right. So, they're like the fundamentalists versus, I guess,
right.
Sackhoff and her squad, which were more like the kind of reformist or kind of more of a modern take.
Which is odd because, you know, she's you know, of a purer bloodline than
right.
Din Djarin.
Yeah, right.
Din Djarin's a foundling.
He was a foundling. Yeah, he was a foundling.
Yeah.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram.